scores! Gilmore scores! The ball clean out!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilar. Aguilar in the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Hey, what's going on? It is Thursday, September 26th, and another hour of Flames Talk is underway. Hopefully you're doing well. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you in our Groundworks downtown studio. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
How are we doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're hanging with Shan and Cam, our producers, this hour as well. And we are now officially halfway through the preseason. After Wednesday's 4-3 overtime loss in Abbotsford against the Vancouver Canucks, Flames are 3-0-1, 4 down, 4 to go in the 2024 preseason. And I think it's been a generally positive preseason so far. Halfway through, 3-0-1, some really positive individual performances. I think there's a little buzz around the group right now. There's certainly a buzz coming from the group. You definitely can pick up on how this group is enjoying being around one another and maybe enjoying some of the different expectations or different narratives around the team and how they might be able to use those narratives to their advantage. So I do think there's a little buzz around this group and a 3-0-1 start to the preseason and some really positive things individually. I don't think that hurts things either.
Yeah, there is a level of excitement, and you get that every year at training camp, but I guess in sort of various, at various levels. I wondered what we'd get going into this year, if there would be a little bit of a sense of dread of what was ahead. And quite frankly, it's the opposite of that for me. Like last year there was a tension that started with the way Elias Lindholm characterized his contract talks, right on the eve of training camp. And there was sort of a tension and a cloud that lingered over this team, not just because of Lindholm, but because of the contract statuses of several veteran pieces. And I don't know, it just seems like this is a loose, and this is a group that just kind of, there's an air of, whatever you guys are saying, like, we're just going to go do our thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that looks like in November and December and January, but it's created a pretty excited vibe around the Saddle Dome.
Now, that doesn't mean there still is an uncertainty. That doesn't mean there's still not plenty of questions, significant questions surrounding this group that need to be answered. And halfway through the preseason, I'm really interested to see where you and I go on this in terms of just how close to answering some of these questions are we?
Like
when we look back to late August, early September, some of the things that would be instant. Hey, what are your biggest questions about the Calgary Flames this year? Blah. Have they been answered yet? Are they halfway to being answered yet? Do we still have no clue? That's what we're going to kick around this segment on Flames Talk. Text line open at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are always welcome on the text line at 960-960. And we kind of came up with a number of questions that we can bounce around and see how close the Flames are to determining the answer at this point.
Yeah, and I'm interested to hear where you are. I think, you know, looking at the list we've come up with, I think a couple of them I feel like are pretty close to answered. A couple of them maybe no more so than a few weeks or a few months ago. So let's dig in and see where we get to.
Well, I think the one that is the most obvious when it comes to this team remains in net. So kind of a two-parter, and they all blend together. Who's going to be? Have we answered the question? Who's going to be the opening night goaltender, opening night starting goaltender? And have we figured out who the opening night backup is going to be? How close to determining that are we with the four preseason games we've seen so far and now exactly 1 week into 2024 training camp?
You know, I think we're pretty close. And I think we're pretty close at least on the tandem part. And I know we've talked a lot about Devin Cooley on this program. I know there's a lot of intrigue about Devin Cooley, and yet I'm of the belief that if you go into camp as the number three goalie, you need one of the other guys to falter to have any chance. No matter how you play, you need one of the two guys in front of you to falter to take that job. And especially what I saw from Dustin Wolf last night, now two preseason games, I think he's through 100 minutes of exhibition hockey with a 9.43 save?
9.43, yep. 50 on 53.
The tandem, in my mind, we know. It's Dan Vladar and Dustin Wolf going into the season. And I know Devin Cooley played his ass off in Edmonton the other night, if I'm allowed to say that on the radio.
Yep.
I thought he was strong again last night. You're certainly not blaming him on the two goals that he did give up.
I thought he might have been the most under pressure of the two guys
I'd agree with that.
Wednesday in Abbotsford as well. That third period, the Canucks had some quality opportunities. He looked sharp there.
Yeah, but at this point, you know, even if Dustin Wolf has one rotten game to end the preseason, I think you're going to look at his exhibition work as a whole and say, yeah, looks like he's ready to be an NHLer. And for me, that solves the first part of it, which is, do we know who the tandem is going to be? The second part, who's going to be starting on opening night? No idea. I don't think that part has been decided, but I do feel like, and I want to know where you stand on this, from my vantage point, you can put those two names on the roster and set it.
So I agree in the sense that, no, I don't know who the opening night starter is going to be. And I think logically, I also agree with you that the tandem is pretty set. I mean, maybe we need to see a little bit more from Dan Vladar, but everything Dan spoke again on Wednesday after practice, or sorry, Thursday after practice at the Dome earlier today. And you know, chatting with him, and again, you can just see how happy he is to have a pain-free hip and how much better he feels in the crease and all that type of stuff. So he's only played two periods and he looked good in those two periods, assuming everything continues in a positive way health-wise for Dan and the performances remain strong. Yeah, you're probably right that it is going to be, whether it's day one of the regular season, day four of the regular season, whatever. I do think Wolf and Vladar will be your tandem, and I do think Cooley's going to be your AHL one to start the year, and that's really through no fault of Devin's, because I think Devin Cooley's had himself a great camp, but I think ideally the pecking order on July 1st is still probably going to be the pecking order on October 8th or 9th or whatever it is, and that is Vladar and Wolf, 1A, 1B, however you want to number those two. And then Cooley at three, but a really promising and interesting third guy that could throw a wrench into things and make things interesting as the season goes along.
I had an interesting conversation a few days ago with Dustin Wolf where we kind of talked about the flip side of this, the Devin Cooley side. And, you know, he was, I guess, sharing his experience going back a year with Jacob Markstrom as the obvious starter, with Dan Vladar as the incumbent backup, and knowing, as we talked about on Flames Talk going into camp a year ago, that Dustin Wolf would really have to kind of flip the script to steal a job from Dan Vladar because of waiver status and on and on. And he said he put pressure on himself in training camp to basically be perfect last year. Like he kind of told himself, if I'm not flawless, I'm going to be back in the minors. And he told me that because there's jobs to earn, he feels way more relaxed. He has experience. And I think Devin Cooley has delivered a really strong camp, but I just think because of the way the other two have performed so far, there's just not a job there for the taking.
Right now, I think you're right. I do think that that's accurate. As much as one of my hot takes on Wednesday was, watch out, they're going to rotate through three throughout the year. They still might, but right now I do think you're right that that's going to be the way it starts. I don't know who's going to be the opening night starter, and I think it's probably going to take the final four preseason games.
Sure.
Wolf's going to get at least one more start. Vladar is going to get at least one more start.
Probably two, wouldn't he?
I would think Vladar, who's only played two periods, gets at least two more starts.
Yeah.
Maybe one or two more for Wolf. We'll see how that plays itself out. But I think it's going to take until the end of the preseason for the Flames to make their decision. And I think, you know, for those of us on the outside forming opinions, probably going to take that long as well.
Okay, so when I came up with my questions, you know, writing for post-media leading into the season, there were two that were, like, far and above everything else.
Yeah.
One was who's going to be the opening night starter. The second was who is going to fill the need for a center. Who is going to be the guy on opening night who's taking faceoffs for the Calgary Flames, filling that vacancy that they've had since Elias Lindholm was traded? Do we know the answer to that question yet?
No, I don't think we do. I really don't. And that's not a knock on Pospisil, who I don't think has done a poor job at all. But I don't think that we're there yet, because we haven't seen new line combinations quite yet.
Yeah.
The groups were juggled up at skate on Thursday morning. So for the first time today, they had new training camp groups. Now, I'm not sure if that's going to carry over into Friday or not, but I think that's probably going to be the case. And for instance, Anthony Mantha was in a different group than Huberdeau and Pospisil, which I think is interesting. So that's something that I think is going to be interesting to watch, is whether or not the lines do change here. And certainly come preseason games, whether it's Saturday or Monday, the next two, are we talking about guys like Zeri getting an opportunity at center? He is yet to. Or a guy even like Sharon Govich getting an opportunity at center. And not so much because they think that's where they should be, but because they feel like it's important to try that out. So I am curious to see how the next week of training camp goes, and then into the final week and the final two preseason games, what some of the lines we see tried out. That is going to be very important and very interesting to see. So because of that, yes, Pospisil has spent the entire first week of training camp as a center. Zeri and Sharon Govich have been on the wing the entire time. But I still think that that is a decision that is pretty far off from being fully made.
Yeah, and I guess the one thing that we're creeping up on is you've got four preseason games left. And I always think of the last two, certainly the last one, but pretty close to the last two, you want to really have a sense of what your team's going to look like. And so I think in these next two, obviously starting Saturday night at home, I think in these next two, we're going to see a ton of experimenting. And then you're going to want to be pretty close to an answer. I do think we'll see Connor Zeri for sure up the middle. I'm curious if we see Yegor Sharangovich, or if that's maybe the one line that they don't tinker around with too much. I know you and I have talked about this off air. You know, we've both been impressed with Martin Pospisil. And then you asked yesterday how Ryan Huska was feeling about his performance center. And while he didn't criticize him, the answer sort of left me wondering if he was thinking about potentially, I don't know if this is going to work out. Do we have that clip?
We do, yeah.
Have you gotten what you wanted to see with Pospisil playing down the middle?
No. I want to see him. So tonight he's playing in the middle again, different line mates, but I want to see him in the middle of the ice live. And then I'd like to see him again with Mantha and Hubie again. So I just want to see if he's able to do it without losing what makes him a really effective hockey player for us. We all know he's got that great speed. He's in people's face all the time. He's first on forechecks. Nobody likes to play against him, but I wanted to play that way as a centerman. So it's just a little bit of time. I want to give him every opportunity that we can to be comfortable in that position without losing his identity.
Feels like they're pretty committed to it, hey?
Yeah, I mean, certainly. And for those kind of wondering why he said, I want to see him live at center, easy explanation there. Martin Pospisil's first game at center in this preseason was the Edmonton half of the split squad. So Ryan Huska was running the bench in Calgary. He wasn't there live to see that game, obviously hinted or told us in that answer to your question that he wanted to see him live as well between Huberdeau and Mantha. He did leave the door open, though, to hey, I haven't seen what I need yet. You know, the one thing I was thinking last night, there were two moments that it really stuck out to me, and I give him credit for this. I know he doesn't give a hoot what people think about him, but Martin Pospisil can't play Martin Pospisil hockey in the preseason. And quite frankly, I was wondering if he was going to try. And there were two hits that he led up on last night that really jumped out to me on the forecheck that I just thought, okay, that's Martin Pospisil kind of understanding I'm a regular in this league now, and I can't be trying to train wreck guys in the preseason. It's just, it's not how it works in September in the NHL. And for that reason, you know, and Ryan Huska gets that, he would have taken note of certainly when Martin Pospisil was first on scene on the forecheck, he would have known that hit would have been finished in the regular season. But I wonder for that reason, if this audition kind of has to stretch into October.
I'm kind of with you, and I think that the other thing is the audition can continue while also starting to give looks to other guys too.
Sure.
So if that means you have a preseason game where Pospisil and Zeri play down the middle, I think that is something that we could see at some point in the preseason. And I go back to, you know, Ryan Huska told me in Penticton, he said it early on in the preseason or training camp, Rob. Yeah, guys, lots of guys are going to get an opportunity at center. We haven't seen it yet, but training camp's 3 weeks, and it's only been one.
And I'll just add to your point, like, if you asked me to name two Flames forwards that don't need a ton of exhibition hockey, I'd say Michael Backlund and Nazem Kadri. And so you're going to have an opportunity to make sure that two of your older players are ready but rested, while also continuing the auditions at center.
Okay, let's focus in on defense. This one's fascinating. Kind of, again, a two-parter. Who is the number six defenseman? We got an update on Thursday morning. Sounds like Kevin Ball is going to hit the ice for the first time in training camp on Thursday morning. That's kind of Friday morning. That's kind of the expectation. He's gone the entire week without skating with the group, so Ball's been dealing with a lower body injury. Sounds like he's ready to return to on-ice sessions with the group, and that's good. Assuming Ball is part of the five seems like it's set-ish. Him, Bean, Anderson, Uyghur, Miramanov. And fully set, no, but it feels like you can, at the very least, pencil those guys in and feel like it's going to stick on your paper.
Mm-hmm.
But that number six spot, who is the number six? And is there room for Tyson Barrie, who's on a PTO, has now played two games as a member of the Flames on this PTO?
Well, I think the number six is Braden Paul. And I say that because if I were in charge of writing the daily lineup, I would covet the fact that Braden Paul can bring you something different. I think, you know, and I know we're going to have a conversation in the next hour about Ryan Lomberg. This is a team that wants to have some attitude. This is a team that wants to be a really tough out, wants to be really tough to play against on a night-to-night basis. And if you don't have Braden Paul, in my opinion, you just don't have enough of that on your blue line. And so you know, especially if we're just going a quote-unquote heads-up matchup between Paul and Tyson Barrie, I want the guy who can bring something a little different than what I think Daniil Miramanov brings. You know, when we did our hot takes yesterday, I said that I don't think there's a spot for Tyson Barrie, but for the purpose of what we're talking about today, which is, do we know the answer to these questions, I still can't handicap it necessarily whether Tyson Barrie sticks around Calgary with a contract or not. We know our insider Frank Saravalli thinks that there is a very strong likelihood, no matter who else sticks with the Flames, no matter how the young kids perform, he thinks that they want to sign Tyson Barrie both as an offensive producer and a culture setter in the dressing room.
Mm-hmm.
I don't you know, I'll just kind of repeat what I've said before. I think he's a little bit redundant with what you have with Miramanov, with what you have coming with Brustevich. I just don't know that there's any need for another right-hand shot on the blue line there. But am I any closer to putting money on it and saying, no, Tyson Barrie will be leaving Calgary without a contract? I don't think I am, to be honest.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to me because I worry about the defensive shortcomings. It's been something that has, you know, dogged Barrie throughout his career. I think he'd be the first to say that, like, hey, yeah, I mean, the area that I'm always working on is the defensive side of my game. His poise with the puck is great. His ability with the puck on his stick is great. His ability in the offensive zone, and I thought he showed a lot of poise working a power play unit with a bunch of really young guys on Wednesday in Abbotsford. Those things are very good, and I do believe. And the other thing is Tyson Barrie is an extremely affable, likable guy,
yeah.
And they want more of that in the locker room. So I firmly believe that signing Barrie at the very worst won't hurt this team. And I think that there's a decent possibility that he helps this team. The dilemma that I have and that I haven't worked out even to form a full opinion yet for me is what he could bring to the Flames enough to make the logjam that much more on the back end for a Soloviev, who, you know, I think has had a quietly decent camp. And I thought, you know, when Jake Bean left the game against the Canucks, Soloviev got bumped up to play with Barrie for a good chunk of that game. They were rotating five, but you saw a lot of Soloviev and Barrie, and I thought he performed really well. You know, I like the fact that Soloviev had half the Canucks at his throat last night because
handled that part of it well, too.
We know how big a fan Craig Conroy is of Soloviev. So you've got Soloviev in the conversation. You mentioned Pahal. I don't know. I'm having a hard time finding where Jared Tenorti fits. And it's almost like here's another name that I know the Flames have been extremely excited about throughout camp. Grushnikov. I think Grushnikov could step in right now. And I think he would hold his own on a third pair in the NHL. I really do. And I think the Flames are kind of looking at it and saying, this guy's opened some eyes there too. Mm-hmm. So you've got all these other defensemen that are in the mix. How much does Barrie block the way? Or does that potential exist for him to block away? That's my big question right now. And that almost has nothing to do with Tyson, the player itself.
For sure.
And everything to do with the situation they're in. So again, am I going to sit here and oppose it if they sign Barrie? No, probably not, because I do think that he can help them in the immediacy. I just wonder what's better for the big picture. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm still trying to figure out. I'm going to need to see more games of Barrie, more games of Grushnikov, more games of Soloviev, Brustevich. I'm kind of with you on the Pahal front. I mean, is Pahal a everyday NHLer on every team in the league? To be determined. But he does bring the element that you talked about, and he is also a guy that I know that the head coach is very fond of in Ryan Huska.
Yeah.
But I also know Huska's really fond of Tyson Barrie.
Right.
So it's a really interesting
who
one.
Who he coached in junior.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no shortage of options on that third defense pairing, right? You've got... as you mentioned, like, Soloviev's a guy who really should be taking that next step to be an NHL regular. How does he fit in? I'm not exactly sure. You've got Pahal, who I think finally established himself as a regular in the second half of last season with the Flames after being claimed on waivers. We never talk about Joel Hanley, who's a guy that, quite frankly, I don't know where he fits. I do expect Jared Tenorti to spend a good chunk of this season with the NHL team. I didn't think that at first, but now, you know, the more I hear about what he can bring, I sort of think he's a guy who's around.
Who's that?
Jared Tenorti.
Okay.
Yeah, as the 7 or 8. And I know Daniel Sprong embarrassed them on the game winner, sorry, the tying goal last night. For those who are watching, 14 seconds left. I would only say Jared Tenorti is not going poke check there in any month other than September. So I wouldn't be too worried about maybe that part of it. And I know some people are going to say you got to finish that hit regardless, but I think that was a little bit of Jared Tenorti playing preseason hockey. I'm not necessarily defending that. I wouldn't necessarily be screaming, you got to send him to the Wranglers because of what happened on that sequence. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of guys in the mix for that spot. And we do, you know, if Kevin Ball's healthy and as long as Jake Bean's healthy, because he exited early last night in Abbotsford, we kind of know five guys on the blue line. And what are there, buddy? Six, seven options for that last spot?
Yeah. And even if they decide to carry eight on the blue line, you're still talking about some difficult decisions.
And you're talking about a trickle-down effect that the organization has to think about, too. You know, if you suddenly wind up with a bunch of veterans in the minors, then you're not getting the ice time you need for the Brustoviches and the Poiriers and those guys. And so this is a little bit of a jigsaw puzzle at both levels.
Yeah, now all of a sudden, if just throwing two names out there, if Hanley and Tenorti or mm-hmm. Hanley and Pahal are playing in or the Solovyov American League, even. Now all of a sudden, is Brustovich a top pairing guy? Now right. He's a second pair guy. And what does that mean for Poirier and
Grushnikov and Kuznetsov?
And you'd love to have a deep blue line right? down there, but it's like you also, yeah, the trickle down on development is something you need to figure out as well. It's why, again, it is, I do pause when I hear, oh, just sign Barry. That's easy. I don't think it's as simple or as black and white. And again, this has almost nothing to do with Tyson Barry himself or the way he's played. Like I listened to Mick, like she's been raving about him. Mick's a former D as well. And so when she talks about defensemen that she likes, I listen. And she's been extremely impressed in two viewings of Tyson Barry. As almost nothing to do with him, the player, has everything to do with what adding another veteran would do to the right. overall organizational depth chart.
Can we get through one or two more? Maybe a little rapid fire?
Okay, yeah. You ask one and I'll ask the other.
All right. Okay.
Because we got to hit some texts as well.
Well, you and I talked a lot about this heading into camp. One of the questions was, can Zane Parekh earn a 9-game audition? Do we know the answer on that one?
Yeah, we do. And he's not ready. And that's fine. And that's what I said, like going back to when we had that conversation, if he shows that, you know, he's close and knocking on the door, and then yeah, have the conversation. I think that what we've seen is that there's still a long way to go in some of the areas of his game. There's some areas of his game that are very, very already. You're like, holy crap, that's almost NHL level, but a lot of important parts aren't. Now, that being said, I still think he's got lots of time in camp, but 9 regular season NHL games? No, I don't think he's ready. I feel confident through 2 preseason games in saying that I don't think he's ready for a 9-game audition. And I do think a return to Saginaw is going to be what happens at some point. But if that doesn't happen for another week and a half, that's okay. Because I think more preseason action, more practicing with NHLers, more being around NHLers, and more time with the coaching development staff, all going to be huge for him before he is sent back to the OHL.
Yeah, the fact that he was not reassigned to junior today on the same day that Matt Vigredine goes to Schwinnigan and Andrew Bashaw, heck of an assist last night, by the way, for the Calgary kid. Might have been offside, but let's...
As I told him last night, quibble. It's onside. It'll be onside forever. We'll never know.
The fact that Zane Parekh was not reassigned to junior alongside those two today tells me that they want to get him some more practice time, that they want to perhaps get him in another exhibition. But I'm with you. He's not ready. And very seldom is an 18-year-old defenseman ready, especially an 18-year-old defenseman who there have been questions about one of the dimensions of his game. Like, we're not talking about a kid who's coming out of junior as Dean build as a complete package. We knew he was going to have to work on the defensive side. We've seen it, like that shot. He's not the biggest guy, right? He's pretty wiry. Like that shot is, whew, man, he can fire it.
He can get it through.
Oh my God. We know there's some incredible offensive gifts there, but not ready for nine yet.
Yep. Last one. Where does Jacob Pelche fit? Do we know yet?
No. I'm no closer to figuring it out. And in fact, I'm further from figuring it out. One of my favorite things to read every week is about the Buffalo Bills, and it's sort of it's called Arrows Up, and it's basically like who's boosted their stock this week, right? Who trended upwards? And so I think about preseason hockey and training camp practices in the same vein. Like who's going arrows up on the Calgary Flames? We know Sam Honzak has boosted his stock. We know Matt Coronato is really making a case. I would say his arrow is trending up. I don't expect him to be on the team, but I've talked lots about how impressed I've been with Sam Morton. Jacob Pelche, to me, has not made a move upwards. And by that, I just mean he's not climbing the depth chart, which makes me wonder where he might fit. Yep. I still would put my money on an opening night fourth line if we're talking about a completely healthy team of Lomberg, Rooney, and Pelche. But I don't think we're any closer to actually knowing where Jacob fits. You?
Yep. No, I don't think we are either. I thought he was good in the third period in Abbotsford. I didn't, like, there was next to
really,
nothing in the first 40.
Really good play to break up that 2-on-1. Really good hustle on the back check to get his stick on that pass attempt. But yeah, you wanted on such a young team, you would have liked to see a few more standout moments from Jacob Pelche last night for sure.
Agreed. Especially with that roster. That was a real big opportunity for him to kind of set himself apart from some others. And I don't know if he did.
No, I wouldn't say he did.
A few texts, lots of them. TJ says Pelche might be cooked. Jimmy says, ask any Hawks fan.
Sorry, can I just weigh in on that one?
Yeah.
Because we're way too quick on this, right? Like, what's it been? 2 weeks since Sam Honzak was a quote-unquote bust in some people's eyes? Like,
or less.
Jacob Pelche is an older player, but he's coming off a season where he played 20 games, and that includes all levels, NHL and AHL. It hasn't, you know, it's been an underwhelming training camp. I do think the numbers game puts him in a bit of a tough spot, but the like write him off, he's cooked. I don't like to hear that at this stage.
Still 23.
Yeah, he's still 23, and a lot of people had him pinpointed as the one kid who was ready to make a difference a year ago.
Yep.
And then he did his shoulder, and then he did it again to a lesser extent. So.
This reads, put Tenorti and Pahal on the third pairing. That'll give the team a ton of snarl and grit. With everybody healthy, I don't know if in the everyday lineup there's a spot for both Tenorti and Pahal because of the five we talked about, unless you go 7D, which is not something you see very well.
I would say, rather, because they both bring that snarl, they can become sort of interchangeable. Like when one needs a night off, when one's just had a tough night, when, you know, I know we don't talk a ton about fighting anymore, but if you think there's going to be an issue with the other team's tough guy, Tenorti can go in and Pahal can sit.
Pat, I normally agree with you if there were any blue chippers knocking, but in a year like this, I think a vet like Barry doesn't hurt. Again, I don't think it hurts. I just don't know if it's the best thing for the organization at this stage in the game. In light of the injury to LA's Doughty, do you think any of these D-men you're mentioning would be of interest to LA in a trade for a mid to late round draft pick? That's from Ray in Calgary. Could very well be something that enters into the equation once LA knows a little bit more about Drew Doughty's status. This from Mick, who says, I always look at the big picture and what gets you closer to winning a cup. Barry only slows up the process. So that would be a no. This says, I think Barry's a better and safer play than Miramanov. Barry has 700-plus games in the NHL. What about Miramanov? Miramanov's part of their vision for the future. Barry is not a long-term piece for the Flames. I think that's safe to say.
And I would even say, you know, because I think a lot of people would agree with the texter's suggestion that the jury is very much out on Miramanov and maybe what he can be at the NHL level. Is he a sixth defenseman who can play power play? You know, is he a capable top four guy as he's going to get the opportunity to show? I just think, like, why wait to figure that out?
Yeah.
Just figure it out this season. Figure out what you have there.
Do we ever consider that Barry could be a deadline asset to move, buy low, and maybe get an asset at the deadline to justify the logjam that comes from the Beav? And could very well be the case.
Yeah.
That I don't know for sure if you get something for him or not.
Yeah.
But could possibly be something that happens.
Yeah, you know, I just want to go back quick to what we said about the trickle-down effect and making sure that even guys like Grushnikov and Kuznetsov are getting the right minutes in the AHL. Like, you have to weigh what your fourth-round pick that you might get in early March is going to do. Can Tyson Barry have a resurgent type year on the power play and get you more than that? Who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe he does, but I'd hate to keep him just because you think, geez, we might turn this into a fourth or a fifth round pick.
Yeah. Enjoyed that. So those are halfway through the preseason. Those are some of our questions about this Flames team. We'll revisit them towards the end of the preseason, see if we have a little bit of a better view as to where things sit.
I know we're wrapping up, but let me throw one more thing on the Barry flipping for an asset.
Yeah.
Isn't Braden Pahal's contract up at the end of this year?
It is.
I think conceivably with the type of game he plays, especially if he can prove to be a trustworthy penalty killer, I think if you've played him every night, you might get more for that.
Potentially, because I think there's always the need for those types of guys at the deadline. That is very fair.
Even if a contender views him coming in as a seven, like, this is our insurance policy. If we lose a guy, we know we can put Pahal into the lineup. I wonder if that type of player might have just as much value at the deadline as a Tyson Barry would.
Good stuff on the text line. It's Pat and Wes along with you on this hour of Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Don't forget, you can get Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts.